my privilege to introduce this morning Dr. Glenn O'Shaughnessy, Executive Director, Board for Mission Services of the Synod. Tell you a bit about him. Born in Cicero, Illinois, attended Redeemer Lutheran and also Morton High School. Attended the University of Illinois for 3 years before deciding to study for the ministry and entering Concordia Theological Seminary, Springfield, where he graduated in 1962. His first call took him to a mission congregation, Amarillo, Texas, and he was to establish that congregation, Faith Lutheran. He served as its pastor from 62 to 67. Then he was called to start a new mission in North Houston. Beautiful Savior Lutheran Church came into being under his labors, prayers, work, and grew to a congregation of some 800 souls. He took the evangelism training seminar at Coral Ridge and introduced outreach focus to his congregation, led evangelism training seminars for pastors of the Texas District for quite a number of years. Served on circuit and district committees, was called to serve as executive director of the Board for Mission Administration of the Texas District in 74. Continued in that position until 78 when he was elected president of the Texas District. He received in 1986 an honorary Doctor of Laws degree from Concordia Austin. Quote, to honor his prolonged superior service to the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. From October of 86 to October of 89, he served as chairman of the Council of Presidents for the Synod. In October of 89, accepted the call to serve as executive director of the Mission Board of the Synod. Since coming to this office, he has exerted positive leadership for continued mission expansion. He has made extensive visits to the various foreign fields. It says here he has established a good line of communication with missionaries through his newsletter, Missionary to Missionary. But I would say has done more than that, has been instrumental in promoting a oneness of heart and mind, a close fellowship of co-laborers among the mission personnel of the Synod. He is married to the former Sandra K. Cruzy of Canton, Ohio. They have been blessed with three healthy children, Stephen, Susan, Joel. He comes today to update us on LCMS missions, changes, goals, new opportunities in Eastern Europe, as well as in our own United States. Would you please welcome Dr. O'Shaughnessy?
Thank you. It's nice being here. First, I'm delighted to hear that there are cars in the parking lot with lights on, because it tells me that seminary students still drive the old cars without the buzzers and the clickers and the voices that remind them that they're leaving their car with lights on. I hope they get those lights off. Serving as executive director for the Board for Mission Services, but never having been a missionary overseas. And that is a disadvantage, and I suppose in some sense an advantage, but I do want to tell you that I am very proud of the missionaries that serve our church in the many places around the world. They are the cream of the crop. They are fine people spiritually. They are fine people in terms of their witness. They are bold to proclaim the good news of Jesus Christ. And I pray that you will keep them in your prayers daily. They certainly do need your prayers. What I'd like to do is just give you an overview of what is happening in missions today. And to remind you that you are the key people in what is happening in world missions today. The teachers at this seminary And I see Dr. Bill Burst over here. Happy to see Bill again, and I know that anyone who shares in his class gets a good insight into the World Mission, having served in Papua New Guinea for 25 years. But key people also, because you will be the ones who will shape the mission thinking of the people of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod in the years ahead. We need you in that mission interpretation role in your parishes, wherever they will be. And certainly I hope that some of you will in fact be those who serve the Lord in one of our world mission fields. I'm afraid that we are less and less mission-driven people in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. We are a church concerned about true theology, and we need to ask ourselves if we are equally concerned about all of the theology. Because the scripture says clearly God wants all to be saved, to come to the knowledge of the truth. God would have us go to the whole world and proclaim the saving gospel of Jesus Christ. The LCMS world is a very small world, and we have to accept that as the present reality. Even to question how many do we actually reach in the United States, which is our home base, where we are under 3 million strong, how many do we reach outside of that 3 million in the United States? How many are we attempting to reach outside of the borders of the United States? I think it's time that we start asking some of those questions. What are we investing dollar-wise as a church? And you cannot do mission without the investment of dollars in reaching the unreached of this world. Who, as we minister in the United States, is primarily benefiting from our ministry? As I look around the room, I see people who look exactly like I do. And I see no one who doesn't look just exactly like I look, or maybe one in the room. You are key. It is a matter of mission, and it is a matter of the proper interpretation of the theology of our Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. I want to tell you that exciting things are happening in the world today. I'm just going to read a little bit of a recap of our last board meeting. It is likely that we'll begin mission activity in Puerto Rico. Now, there are some who might consider foreign mission opportunity and like to serve in Puerto Rico. Talk to your wife about that. We've declared the Ivory Coast a new world mission field, and I'll tell you how we got into the Ivory Coast a little bit later in the presentation. We are serving refugees at this present time in the Ivory Coast. We're making a very bold move into Russia and in other parts of Eastern Europe. It hasn't been easy. The political situation in Eastern Europe is a highly unsettled situation, and you could have another coup there tomorrow. The military is still the key to the whole thing, and you have great numbers of generals and colonels who are becoming powerless, who don't like that thought one bit. We will minister there as long as we are capable of ministering there. We have our first missionary in St. Petersburg. Let me just read you his facts. He's back in the States now, but this is the facts that he sent when he was first arrived there. He started with four words. He said, it is difficult, complicated, cold, snow. He said, I am thankful that I have a lot of money, because you cannot purchase food without a lot of money. He talks about the depression among the people. He sums up by saying, I must be called. He's talking about the divine call. He says, otherwise, I wouldn't come back. There are grim things happening in Eastern Europe, very grim things happening in Russia. We have our second person going to Russia. He'll leave in about another week, a volunteer who will be there for 3 months. The hardest problem of sending anyone to Russia or to Czechoslovakia or any of those countries is to find any housing that in any way is acceptable to someone like you or like me. That's the hardest part of all. If we could find adequate housing, we have any number of volunteers ready to go. We're asking for five candidates out of the two seminaries, and are pretty well assured that we'll receive five candidates for foreign mission assignment, two vicars. In addition, we continue to call a significant number of people experienced pastors and educators to work in foreign fields. And we are turning probably even more toward the experienced people while at the same time continuing to work very hard on the seminary campuses to identify potential prospects. We've had a blessing given to us, the FIR, Forward in Remembrance, a large appeal of our church back in 1982 and 1983. Synod is just kind of closing up all the accounts that haven't been spent, pulling all the monies together. You know, we gathered about $60 million then. There is still $1.267 million in various accounts that has all been given to the Board for Mission Services. And we've been able to set aside $1 million for new mission work any place in this world, and $269,000 it is, for theological studies around the world. That is training the nationals for the ministry among their own people. We have looked at a new and much expanded China strategy. And one of the questions that we have to face as a church is, how will we minister in countries where there will never be a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, like China? Unless China changes significantly, there will be a Christian church in which all Christian churches will assist, but there will never be a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Or do we walk out of China and say, well, that's a billion people that we cannot be responsible for and a billion people that we cannot help? And we find ourselves saying that is unacceptable. That is not the godly, scriptural, Christian approach to missions. And therefore, we will find ways to minister as we have never ministered before as a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod. Ministering with other Christians in places where we will never perhaps even have our own missionaries or a Lutheran Church Missouri Synod planted. By the way, that's going to be in Eastern Europe. We are not going to plant a church in Czechoslovakia. There is a Lutheran Church in Czechoslovakia. It's not in doctrinal agreement with us on every point, but we will still work with that church as much as we are able to assist them, to train their workers, to assist them with theological studies materials, to get up on their feet so that they can minister to their people in Czechoslovakia. Where we are ministering in St. Petersburg, formerly Leningrad, Russia, there are Lutherans there. Finnish Lutherans, German Lutherans, Russian Lutherans. House churches, no pastors. 70 years without religious materials. No Sunday school materials. No catechetical materials. No confessional materials. We will try to reestablish the churches that are there in those houses and provide them with theological study material, provide them perhaps with visiting professors from this seminary, perhaps you as a parish pastor one day, to assist those pastors, and I don't know what else to call them, who are serving those house churches, who have simply no theological formal training, to find a way to help them grow in their theological skills, that they might better serve among those people. But a new and expanded China strategy. This is what Hank Rowald writes. He says, indeed, the irony is that today's Great Wall, the bamboo curtain, has not kept the gospel out of China. True, that wall did hide many atrocities and much persecution. What is happening today, though, is that the gospel has been walled into China. As the spiritual vacuum in China and the Communist Party is exposed, the one group people look for as having hope, joy, integrity, and sincerity is the church. He concludes it by saying, the gospel lives. We have a partner church in Hong Kong in 1997. That church will be a part of China because in 1997 the Chinese communists take over Hong Kong. And so we'll no longer be a church on the outside of China looking in. We will be a church inside of China, ministering inside of China. That isn't even our decision. The communist Chinese have made the decision to incorporate the Holy Christian Church right into the boundaries of their country. Many things are happening in missions. Other good things that are happening. We extended a contract to David Daniel, former professor at this seminary, to serve as an advisor in Czechoslovakia. He works for the Czech government in the area of education, strategic location to help us do things in Czechoslovakia placed there, I'm sure, by God, helping us get many English teachers as a second language into Czechoslovakia. We approved a strong resolution to the Board of Directors encouraging an overseas volunteer youth ministries program, and not just youth ministries, but overseas volunteers. We as a church are not much in the volunteer ministry outside of this country, but we have endless numbers of people who volunteer anyway and serve through all kinds of organizations, and others who want to step forward and are step forward in and asking, can we go and serve our church on a volunteer basis? They'll pay their own way, every penny of it. All we've got to do is find them the opportunities to be out there where they can share the good news of Jesus Christ. We have three teachers in China today sharing the good news of Jesus Christ. Three young people in China today. That's the three that we sent. There are 30 other Lutheran Church Missouri Synod people in China today, sent through other organizations that we have identified. And we're trying to get all of their names together, all of the records of all the people who are serving around the world, so that we can assist them in how they might better, when they are in a country like China, proclaim the saving gospel of Christ. Good things happening. And I want to emphasize again, you are the key. I'm glad you're here. Because the beginning is that you understand what your church is about in the world and where it is in that world. We have established goals and objectives as the Board for Mission Services. Goals and objectives just help us to be on target and identify what we're going to be about. They're not an answer all to themselves. But one thing we have determined is, as a Board for Mission Services, there are a couple of things that we can do very, very well. As Lutherans, we can do things very well around the world. We can be helpful in planting the Christian church. We send out evangelistic missionaries through the Board for Mission Services. It is not the task of the evangelistic missionary to go and establish a church and pastor it. It is the goal of the evangelistic missionary to just keep going out and establishing more churches wherever he might be, whether that's West Africa or whether that's in Thailand or whether that's in Papua New Guinea or wherever he might be. And the second thing that we do very well is train the people of that country to serve as their own leaders. So the minute we send a missionary to the field, we send a missionary team to the field, one to open the church, one to begin training the people to serve their own people in that congregation. We, as pastors especially, you are highly skilled and highly qualified to do that planting and to do that training. But our people are not to serve an individual congregation overseas. Others can do that, and others must be trained to do that. We also must believe that we are not going to be on every field forever, and that we must immediately upon arriving on a field determine that it may happen that we'll be asked to leave, and quite soon. And therefore, you train the people of that country to shepherd their congregations. I'm going to digress here a little bit about Liberia. We don't hear much about Liberia, but it's mainly because there's so much happening in Eastern Europe. But there's been a terrible civil war in Liberia. And the people among whom we worked in the upper part of Liberia, at one time, they were the tribe of the president of Liberia, President Doe. And if you know a little bit, if you read the paper once in a while, a number of months ago, President Doe was captured and President Doe was mutilated, killed. That means the Kron people are fleeing for their lives, have fled for their lives. Because they are just as much under threat now as was President Doe. They fled to Sierra Leone. They fled to the Ivory Coast, and we have now begun mission work in the Ivory Coast among those refugees. The interesting thing is because, and this goes back to the Acts of the Apostles, when you read that the disciples, or that all the Christians fled because of the persecutions, one of the next things you read, I think in Acts chapter 8, it talks about the growth of the church. Despite the fact that our missionaries had to leave Liberia, all of them, they were given 2 days' notice, told to pack two suitcases and be ready to go, and they were taken off the field. And they left every possession they had behind that wasn't in those two suitcases. And you, through the church, reimbursed those missionaries for their losses. It's part of the cost of doing mission work around the world. They left their vehicles behind, which they'll never see again. Despite the fact that they left the field, the number of congregations being served in Liberia has grown. And that's because the missionaries did their work, and they did their work well. They left behind those people capable of proclaiming the saving gospel of Jesus Christ among the crowned people. They not only proclaimed it where they proclaimed it wherever they have been forced by persecution to go. We now have 25 preaching stations in the Ivory Coast that we didn't have before. Served not by pastors. We still don't have a missionary back in Liberia. We have only one missionary in Ivory Coast. But served by the people we have trained to proclaim the gospel of Christ among their people. So we have said, while we'll do many things as a board of mission services through our missionaries, two things primary. We will plant congregations and we will train the leaders of the country to serve their church. The goals speak to that. I'm going to read just a couple of the goals to you. One is what talks about the primary mission. All baptized members of the LCMS are involved in some way in the primary mission of the church, making disciples of all people. And we have to keep reminding ourselves that is the primary mission of the church. Secondly, about field strategies, a comprehensive mission strategy for the Borth Mission Services enables each field to identify and describe its challenges, assign its priorities, and design appropriate methodologies for that field. There are no two fields in this country that are the same. Every field has to develop its own mission strategies. The missionaries, the people of that country, are the key people in identifying that strategy. Unreached peoples. Unreached and uncommitted people in urban and rural areas in the United States and abroad are reached with the gospel. And the important part of that is not just the rural, but the urban people. This is becoming more and more and more an urban world. We think New York City is a big city. New York City doesn't even rank on the top 15 of the largest cities in the world. And it's decreasing in size by comparison to many other cities of this world. The mega cities are where the people are and where the mission isn't. That's true of the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. That's true of a lot of church groups. And we are making a determined effort that we will turn our mission effort more and more into the cities. If we evangelize in the country, that will follow the people of the country as they move into the city and establish missions in the city as well. Another goal. North America is emphasized as a mission field, and each constituent culture and each group with special needs is effectively evangelized. New York City is a foreign mission field. Los Angeles, California is a foreign country and ought to be treated as a foreign mission field. Any of you from Los Angeles? You agree with that assessment when you look at the anything compared to here? We need to identify that and then do something about it as a church. Because the weakest effort of the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod, the weakest effort, has been aimed at where the most people are, in the inner cities. I doubt that any of you will be called to an urban inner city ministry. But that's one of the goals of our board, is to say that we, in this country, blessed as we are, will recognize what the enormous mission challenge is right in our very backyard. Family units, all missionaries, whether single or family units, are equipped for effective service. We need to do a better job of training all of our workers. Any of you who would go into cross-cultural ministry, I think, will be asked to work with the Borth Mission Services and attend about a 2.5-week seminar after you graduate from the seminary so that we can help you identify what cross-cultural ministry is all about, not only cross-cultural ministry in Africa, but cross-cultural ministry in Chicago and cross-cultural ministry in St. Louis and cross-cultural ministry wherever you might be involved touching cross-cultural ministry. There's not a person in this room, not a student here, who will not, no matter where you're placed, will not have the opportunity to do cross-cultural ministry in the United States. And we need to start recognizing that as reality and doing some training to prepare ourselves for the opportunities that are there. Goal number 8 talks about indigenous leaders. Independent partner churches are effectively involved in mission under the guidance of indigenous leaders. Not under the guidance of missionaries, under the guidance of indigenous leaders. Okay, I'm going to just keep going on because I understand I've only got 20 minutes, and then there will be a time for questions and answers toward the end. We'll be 100 years in mission in the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod in 1995. Interesting, I think, that it took us 50 years to get involved in world missions as a church. We don't look at that first 50 years of the history of our church because we're going to be celebrating about 150 years of synodical history and 100 years of mission history at about the same time. Our first movement into India happened in 1995. We are still assisting the church in India today. That probably says something about the church in India and something about the Lutheran Church Missouri Synod and how we did our mission work back then, trying very hard to help that church get on its feet and be an autonomous, independent partner church. Today, I don't know how many countries we work in. In a variety of ways, I suppose we work in 40 to 45 or more countries. Our resources are moving around the world, our personnel resources in many places as well. And when I say I don't even know how many because it's hard to define, it's hard for me to define exactly where we are in Eastern Europe. Are we in Hungary at this point? Well, we are in a little bit of a way, but not much. But we are in many places around this world. We're not by far a large mission group. We're probably about a mid-size mission group around the world. We have great opportunities, great potential, and we have great potential for growth, and we are planning for that growth as well. At the moment, we have about 180 missionary units on the field. That's pastors, that's educators, that's deaconesses, that's lay, doctors, nurses, about 180 mission units on the field. We could build that number up to 200 easily just by counting volunteers. Actually, we could get to 250 by counting volunteers. We can come up with about 700 souls on the field for whom we are responsible as a church. I'm not sure that that's even a key number about how many we have out. What is important is that we have them in the right places and doing the right things and that we are multiplying our workers out there in the field. We're training others to do the work of ministry. That somehow rings from Ephesians. It seems to me that's what the parish pastor in this country is supposed to be doing as well, training others for ministry. We work through chaplains. Military chaplains are not included in that number of 180, the whole volunteer segment not included as well. Exciting days, and I'm going to run through a couple of things that I think are really exciting and unique. I talked a little bit about the Ivory Coast, a new mission field. We are now sending two seminary graduates to Ivory Coast out of this next class. They'll join the Dutchmans in Ivory Coast. They are there now doing their work. We are calling another experienced pastor to be in Ivory Coast as well. And so we'll build an initial mission team of 4 plus some volunteers to work in that country. It is a new field for us. We're working just in one small slice of Ivory Coast. We think it's a rich field. People are receptive to hear the gospel, anxious to hear the gospel, and it is a privilege for us to be able to be there and share the good news of Jesus Christ. I'll tell you a little mission story. The Dutchmans are not pastors, but they work on the field in Ivory Coast, and Kathy Dutchman had a problem with her shoulder. She had a frozen shoulder, they call it, and I have a frozen shoulder right now. It means you lose some of your mobility because of an injury. I went to the hospital last week and was there 2 days, and they manipulate your shoulder on the operating table, and it loosens it up pretty effectively. In Ivory Coast, the cure for frozen shoulder is that you pay a farmer to get a cow down on its side, and you tie 3 legs of the cow. And then you tie your wrist to the free leg of that cow. And as that cow jerks his leg, it does unfreeze your shoulder. You give the farmer $2 for his trouble with the cow, and you give somebody else $4 for a bottle of rum, and you are healed. It cost a lot more when I went to the hospital here, but I'll take my way. But I think it's exciting that we are still and we are always looking for new opportunities. We have to understand we have been in some places in missions for many, many years. India, 100 years. Only one missionary personnel still in India. We can't send any more into India. No longer can you send in missionary personnel. We could send in doctors and nurses and others, but a pure missionary cannot go into India. We cannot get a visa. But there are places where we can still send those missionaries, and they can do effective work in planting the church and training the leadership. We're looking at countries like Nigeria, Papua New Guinea, the Philippines, and a number of other countries, and asking how long will we continue missionary personnel there? We've been in those countries 50 and more years. How long do you continue to assist them with missionary personnel, and when do you say to a partner church, you can do it, and you are on your own? If you need somebody to assist with the seminary, we think that's a valid place for our especially you pastors to be. We can help you there, but you don't need us to plant churches anymore. You've got people to do it. Let us help you just where you need to be helped. So we'll be pulling some missionaries off the fields, probably even closing some fields as far as our history is concerned, but opening new places around the world all the time. Cuba. Interesting, because Cuba is certain to follow the path of Eastern Europe and Russia. It's just a matter of time. When is it going to happen? The Lutheran Church is in Cuba. We were in Cuba, and our last missionary left in 1965, I believe. About a year and a half ago, three pastors came out of Cuba, and they identified themselves as Lutherans. I would not want to test their theology, because I think their theology would be wholly inadequate by any Lutheran standards. But you have to understand, these are people who have been there now for 40 years. Not that long. They've only been there about 25 years. But they've been there 25 years with no theological education and no textbooks. What they're getting as theology is what has been handed down from the fathers, and they probably weren't as good at that as Moses and the other fathers when they handed down the things that they kept it verbatim. But one of the three pastors who came out, a very young man, we said, would you be willing to go to a seminary and do some further studies? And he assured us he would. We could not send that man to St. Louis or Fort Wayne. And that's because Fidel Castro said no person from Cuba is ever going to attend a school in the United States. But that student is now at St. Catherine's Seminary in Canada with our partner church, studying theology, preparing himself to go back and be a pastor, a better pastor, a better equipped pastor to the people on Cuba. We watch Cuba regularly. We have two members on the Board of Missions and staff who can go into Cuba at any time, and they have already done that. One is Johannes Gedrod, who is our area secretary for Latin America, and Johannes can go in because he is Brazilian by birth and by nationality, and Brazilians have always had free access into Cuba, so Johannes can go into Brazil, right into Cuba. And the other is Bob Gonzalez. Bob worked with Hispanic ministry in this country. Bob's parents sent him out of Cuba before he was 15 years of old, and Fidel Castro says he didn't know anything better, and therefore he's always welcome to come back. So Bob has been back in Cuba on two occasions, working with our Lutheran people there, helping us to identify who they are, and we think preparing for the day when we will once again be able to go into Cuba and probably have to do much the same as we were doing in Eastern Europe, and that is providing theological materials, helping pastors to upgrade their theological knowledge and skills, and building up a church that is there. Vietnam. We are not in Vietnam at this present time. The church is not there, but we have a pastor, if you know Ninh Nguyen, out of California. Interesting man. He was one of the last to leave Vietnam when the communist Chinese were taking over. He wasn't a Christian at the time. He worked for a newspaper or for a CBS or NBC or one of those. Became a Christian. Became a Lutheran. Attended the seminary in Fort Wayne, I believe, and now serves as a pastor on the West Coast. He plans to go back to Vietnam. That is the whole goal of his life, to share the gospel with his people. His son-in-law is now at the seminary. And he says as soon as his son-in-law leaves the seminary, he will become pastor in his place at this congregation in California. Now, I don't know what that does to the call process. And I don't know what that does to placement, because he's got it all figured out. His son-in-law is going to take his place, and he's going to Vietnam. He'll do that at no expense to the church, at least to the Board of Mission Services, because there's another pastor in California, and they are forming an independent mission society who will have one goal, and that is to fund ministry in Vietnam. It is already established. They have already gathered monies, and it appears that they'll have all the monies they need for ministry in Vietnam when the need is there. They'll fund the mission, we will support the mission, and we will call the personnel for that mission. It's a new way of being in mission without having the dollars reflected in the Board of Mission Services budget. And it's a way that reaches the people where they want to be. They want to be personally involved in missions, and this mission society gives them that opportunity to do that very thing. We think we'll be in Vietnam in about a year and a half. We are in Thailand. Thailand, formerly Siam, for those of you who are a little older and you know your maps that way, is a country which is very difficult for missionaries. We are not allowed, again, to send in someone as a missionary person. We are trying to get a missionary visa. I think there are only 100 missionary visas in the whole country. That is a large, large country. We think perhaps now that we have a missionary visa for Mark Bodich. Did he come out of this school? Maybe not. Maybe out of Fort Wayne. He is our whole missionary personnel group in Thailand. There are about 7 missionaries there now, are involved in language training, and that's a primary concern that they become highly skilled, at least reasonably skilled, in using the Thai language. All the people we send to Thailand now are under an umbrella called the Concordia Welfare and Education Society, which is a social ministry approach into a government. We offer the government people who can do things that the government needs done, and they will accept the missionary under that restriction. Mark Bodich does teach English as a second language to the people of Thailand. When he's done with that task, he serves as a missionary to the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod. And as a matter of fact, while he's doing the teaching, he is already serving as a missionary to the Lutheran Church of Missouri Synod because he's free to use curricular materials in teaching like there's a book called The Bible Dictionary, the Bible itself. A lot of things can be used to teach English as a second language, a lot of things which reflect Christ. We're involved in teaching English as a second language. We're involved in an adoption agency in Thailand. We have a deaconess over there who is working with young prostitutes, and I'm talking about girls 11 to 13, trying to get them out of prostitution and into a godly lifestyle. The government recognizes the troubles in this area. Parents sell their children into prostitution, and then they sell them again 2 years later, and then they sell them again 2 years later, and they sell them again 2 years later until the girl has no value. And then the parent loses his or her source of income. And so Christy Nielsen has a great opportunity to witness to Christ as she works with these young prostitutes. We have a graduate of this school in Thailand, Ted Nakalong, who is in Thailand. He can go in as a missionary because he is Thai. And he can immediately do all the things that any pastor in this country can do, like trying to establish a church in Bangkok. And that's a great blessing having Ted on the field and kind of a focal point of our missionary team so that they can take all of their efforts and direct them toward a place of worship in Bangkok. We're in a couple of different places in Thailand, up in Bangkok and then in the far south part of the country as well. It is a new and developing mission field for us. We have problems on some fields. Bill Burst comes out of Thailand. And when Bill Burst went into Thailand, people tell me that Thailand was a wonderful place to be, and you felt totally safe. It was the kind of place where, at one time, Bill, what do we have, 100 missionary personnel in Thailand? In New Guinea, 100. Today, I think we're down to 7 missionary units. And we are watching those units very carefully because New Guinea is no longer a safe place to be for missionaries. And our missionaries have been under some threat. We brought our missionaries pretty much into just 2 or 3 areas where they can relate and be close to each other. We watch very closely against that thing when we might have to pull the missionary personnel off the field for their own personal safety. One of the most interesting things, I think, that I've seen happen in Papua New Guinea, although there we work with theological education in a very specific way and in a very helpful way at two different seminaries. We've got a doctor there, and then we've got the father of the doctor's wife, and we've got the sister of the doctor's wife, and I don't know how many, we got a whole family of Lutzes over there. It's like a family reunion. It's like the Board of Mission Services is paid to have a family reunion in Papua New Guinea for this particular group. But the Lutzes come out of a missionary family, missionaries to India, as I recall. And they love their Lord, and they love their service, and the children get involved. One of the oldest missionary we have, I suppose, at the moment, is a teacher in Papua New Guinea. And my guess, he's, 68 years old at least, maybe more, teaching. He's retired now. And so now he's going to continue in Papua New Guinea as a volunteer and continue to do the very thing he did while he was being paid by the Board of Mission Services, teaching the missionary children at the missionary school. One of the great things happening in Papua New Guinea. I wouldn't normally talk to you about funding, but I'm going to talk to you about funding. Funding is kind of near and dear to all of our hearts. I don't know how you fund your education. It's probably not easy. You drive older cars, and you do with a little less, and you do a lot of things. Our church gathers about $900 million through its congregations each year. And that amount is going up at a tremendous pace. The amount of money being gathered by our congregations. In the middle of recession, our congregations are gathering funds at a tremendous pace. Of the $900 million gathered, one penny of every dollar ends up going to reach the unreached outside the United States. We are not doing very well in terms of our priorities. Our program cannot run at $9 million. We have a much bigger program than that. We actually spend about $15 million a year through the Board of Mission Services. And so we generate by asking individuals, by asking congregations, by asking districts, mainly people just choosing to give, we are able to generate almost $6 million a year in other funds in order to make sure that this church has an aggressive and sizable world missions program. It isn't, I don't fear that the amount of money coming to us in the normal synodical channels is decreasing, because I know that there are people out there who have a mission zeal and a mission heart who will give to the mission of the church. I fear that that happens because I think it is a very poor witness to the faith that is in us when we spend almost all of our resources on ourselves and when we have so little concern for the world that is unreached outside of the United States. And that is where the unreached are. I use this sentence: in the time that it takes me to say this sentence, 70 children have been born. That's 70 children pretty fast. Almost none into families where they will ever hear the name of Jesus Christ from their parents. The task and the opportunity and the challenge for the church has never been larger. And we need you. We need you to consider missionary service. We need you praying for your missionaries and praying for the church in mission. And we need you as active, positive spokesmen in the parishes that you'll one day serve, encouraging your people to be equally concerned about reaching the unreached with the gospel of Christ. I'd like to answer any questions that you have. Yes.
What do you see are the potential opportunities, because we have a lot of countries that are closed to missionary visas now, for making use of more tent-making opportunities, especially like with a lot of guys coming into seminary now from other careers that maybe could combine, you know, having a theological education as well as using other skills in those countries?
Yeah, really, that's what we are doing, for instance, for the Concordia Welfare and Education Societies. Our pastors become tent makers. They support themselves by doing some other ministry, and then they do ministry on the side as well. It has pluses and minuses. If I had a choice, I would always send into a country a person who has simply had all of his time to devote to missionary work. I mean, that just makes good sense. Because if you're a tent maker and doing missionary work, it is a real conflict. Where does my family come into all this? If I'm working 40 hours a week at a job, and then on Saturdays and Sundays I'm doing my church and my ministry work, where does my family come in? And a lot of our families are not going to be strong enough to handle those kind of challenges. The Apostle Paul, though, says, "Be all things to all men, that we might by any means gain some." And I think the church has got to be in that position where we will say we will do anything we can to share the gospel of Jesus Christ. We will bend, we'll never bend principles. We'll bend the methodologies that we've had in the past, create new methodologies in order to allow us to be in a country and share the gospel of Jesus Christ. We don't sacrifice our principles as Lutherans. We don't fellowship. And by the way, we're not on the mission field. We follow the same fellowship principles you do. The only difference is I think that probably our missionaries probably pray a little bit more with other Christians. You know, and you'll go out in your parishes and you may not run into a Baptist minister. Our missionaries in many of these countries are looking for anyone who is a Christian. And they will involve themselves very much in prayer fellowship, which is not a problem within our church. But the worship, we worship independently the same as anyone else. We create churches. When we're in churches like in countries like Czechoslovakia, we're not worshiping in Czechoslovakia or leading worship in Czechoslovakia. We may be producing materials which will help that church to worship in Czechoslovakia. But I think we have to say, we don't understand what all of the opportunities are, and we don't know how we're going to get into all the places where God opens doors. We're going to find the ways to do that. Let me give you, and by the way, yesterday morning, and we pray, we have a staff gathering every morning at 7:30, and we spend time in prayer. Yesterday, one of the men suggested that we pray for a budget of $20 million. I thought that's all right. That's fairly specific. It's a nice round number. I could live with a $20 million budget. We don't have one now, but I leave shortly after this meeting because I was going to eat here, but because of the ice, I'm going to have to get back, I'm afraid, because we're meeting with a man who may well give us $1 to $1.5 million to do ministry in Eastern Europe, which was unbudgeted because we weren't anticipating it. Now, does God open doors, and does God provide the resources, and does God move us toward that budget of $20 million? I think that's exactly what God does. I think we have got to show the planning, and we've got to lift the vision. And as that happens, the people of God will provide the resources necessary for the task. That's the same in your parish, by the way. If you go in there and do a mundane ministry, you're going to get mundane results. If you really trust in the Lord, if you are in the Word, if you are teaching and preaching that Word, if you're excited about what is going on and excited about the possibilities, marvelous things can happen in any parish ministry. Other questions?
What about the thing we're interested in doing mission work, but we want to speak the language? What could be, so we can see forward of that, what might be in front of us? What happens when you graduate and don't speak the language? What do we
expect? There are a number of things. First of all, if you are even interested or thinking about missions, and Harley Kapiski and I were talking about this, when we came out of the seminary, no one asked us, where would you like to go? They just, I walked up and the call was put in my hand and said, Glen Oshani, Amarillo, Texas. And I thought, I've got a foreign assignment for a boy from Cicero, but they didn't ask. And we had others in the class who were assigned all over the world. I'm not sure that we're doing all of us a favor by being so generous as to say to everybody, where would you like to go? Maybe we need to be led by the call of the Spirit. Here am I, send me. If you're even thinking about it, though, be in contact with John Mueller, or give me your name and I'll put you in contact with John Mueller, our director for personnel. John's on the campus quite often, and John would like to begin tracking you from this point on, whether you're last year, first year, or whatever. It's John's goal to meet with every first-year student and to begin a process by which we might identify those who would be best qualified for missions. We don't know where you'd be assigned, and you don't know where you'd be assigned. When we brought a man out of the seminary last year and assigned him to Togo, that man is now in Canada. And he is in intensive language preparation outside of Ottawa. And after 1 year of intensive language training in French, he will be sent to Togo. where he will learn the language among the people with whom he will work. And so he will be 2 years in intensive language training before he really is able to initiate and begin missionary work. But we will take care of all of the language training that you need. On the other side, this is Glenn O'Shaughnessy speaking probably. I don't know that anyone ought to graduate from a college today without a second language. Ought to be allowed to graduate from one of our Lutheran schools without a second language. And I'm talking about usable language. Greek is usable, obviously. I don't want to get too much trouble here. But I'm talking about a current, you ought to be able to talk German, or you ought to be able to talk Spanish, or you ought to be able to talk some usable language. I'm not sure anyone ought to be able to leave this seminary without a second usable language. Probably in this country, Spanish. Because you will be involved in ministry to Hispanics no matter where you are in this country. That's my thought. That's not going to change the curriculum here. But we will handle your language training. Same with business managers. If we find a fellow who has a lot of skills and is a business manager but doesn't have them all, we'll send him back to school at our expense to get that business manager training so that he can go out and be a business manager on the field. Our missionaries are always involved in further training or pre-training. And again, we want the most skilled people that we can possibly find, the most spiritually skilled people as well, on the field and serving their church. Let's start down the road.
The sacraments at that point. There's a point at which we would recognize a person as a pastor. In this situation, these people from these 25 villages, a spiritual leader recognized by each of those preaching units, meets every Saturday. And on that given Saturday, they are then taught the lesson that they will teach their people the following Sunday. They come back every Saturday. They do that faithfully. They do it religiously. They teach what they are able to teach. No more. And then we start looking out of that group of 25, who among those 25 may be the best of the 25, might be the most able to be educated among the 25, and we start lifting them to the next level of theological skills in that country. In Liberia, we had some men through and declared pastors. In Ivory Coast, obviously, we do not, and it may take 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years for that to happen. Papua New Guinea is an example again. They've got two seminaries in Papua New Guinea, and this is, I'm talking about an example of how we train people. The one seminary in Papua New Guinea would be probably not too unsimilar to this one, Bill. They are highly qualified people who are studying the classic languages. The other seminary in the hill country or in the mountains, what does that teach, Bill? Maybe a 7th grade level, 8th grade level? But when those people come out, they're pastors. They have learned as much as they can learn, and they know their theology, and they serve as pastors of that church. There is no law about when a person becomes a pastor, but it is they're put through some pretty good paces. Okay, that's all, yeah.
I was going to ask if you could comment a little bit on the place that Mass Media has in the goals that you just mentioned.
Mass Media has a very significant place. For instance, in Russia now, the Lutheran Hour is setting up transmitters to broadcast in the various parts of Russia. We see we are in with the Lutheran Hour in Bangkok, in Thailand. They are in Hong Kong, broadcasting partly into China, all over the world. Media itself, apart from the ability to go in and reach the people that have been reached by the media, is probably not all that effective. And so it is our goal that where the media is being used, we will follow up with the goal of planting the church and doing the traditional ministry things. But yes, by the way, some of the most effective media on radio is being done in Venezuela, where they it's the Lutheran Hour again, they purchase prime time, noon hour kind of radio. 15 seconds, 20 seconds, 30 seconds. And they talk not so much about Christ directly, but they talk about, is your life empty? Are you looking for more? We would like to send you a booklet. Do you have trouble with alcoholism in the home? Does your husband abuse you? Really, topics that in Caracas, Venezuela are really on target. And when they call in or write in, they receive a booklet that is absolutely Christ-centered. And then the missionaries follow up with the visits to the homes, and the church in Caracas and in Venezuela is doing very well. And we're looking at that as a model. Maybe the Lutheran Hour, first of all, the Lutheran Hour, as it is broadcast today, is a radio broadcast for Christians. They know that. They've done all the polls. It reaches almost no one who is unchurched anymore. It reaches Christians. It reaches Methodists, Baptists, Presbyterians, Lutherans, Catholics, all listen to the Lutheran Hour. Maybe we ought to be taking the money and using it differently and doing that spot kind of thing in the United States and buying the prime time, because that's expensive stuff, but hitting the needs of people with a magnificent vehicle to do that. So I hand here.
That kind of leads into my next question about the connection between the Board of Mission Services and NLL. I know they kind of decided to go into Russia, and I think one of the children was there for 6 months or something. What is the connection there? Do you two groups work closely, or are they kind of one off on their own, or
It's tough to speak to that one. We have a little tension between us. We don't see any problem with the Lutheran Hour in media ministry. They have done an excellent job, and even where they are in Riga, they are setting up their radio broadcasting systems, and that's fine. They've developed good follow-up material. That's fine. We have a little concern about where the seminary will be. First of all, we don't decide that. LLL doesn't decide that. The churches will decide that. And so we're in constant dialogue with the Lutheran Hour. I would like to say that I think we work reasonably well with the Lutheran Hour. And while there may be some conflicts between us, they are fairly minimal. They're doing excellent work, and we try to follow up on their religious broadcasts and with a personal context for our missionary personnel that people might be reached with the gospel. That's about it for the Lutheran Hour. Any other questions? Yes.
Can you discuss some of the roles which wives would play in overseas mission
work? That's a good question, because more and more of our wives are career people, and they would like to be involved in a meaningful way, if not in their husband's ministry, in a meaningful way with their own lives. Missionary wives are, of course, if you talk about Africa, you're talking about one kind of missionary wife, because the missionary wife in Africa is the one who must manage the house, who must prepare every meal from scratch, who normally works with the children of the village in a nutritional program or some other educational program, and is very much involved in her husband's ministry. If you talk about the missionary wife in Mexico, it's a different missionary wife, because the missionary wife in Mexico cannot work. And in a number of countries around the world, she cannot work outside of the home and for pay. But the missionary wives are always an integral part of their husband's ministry. In a few countries, they can work outside of the home. I think Taiwan, where they can work outside of the home, and there some of them will. But when I write to the missionaries, boy, did I learn this fast. I told you I was never a foreign missionary. And so I wrote my first letter to missionaries, which I write every month. I write them a lengthy letter. I don't know if do you get it here at the seminary? Yeah, okay. And I wrote the first letter, and I addressed it personally to the men. Whew. Oh, wrong approach. And I found out, this is from experience too, we support missionary units, families. The children are just as vital to the mission as the husband or the wife. Now, that's not exactly true, of course. But the children are involved in mission activity. The wife is involved in mission activity. She finds her niche. And the husband is involved in missionary activity. And critical to each other. If the wife is not happy, you have to take the team off the field. If the children are not happy, the team comes off the field. But they function as a team. They're proud of that. And we address them as the missionary team on the field, the husband and the wife in any given location. If you want to know what missionaries think about their life, then talk to the missionaries. I find very few missionaries who ever regret the fact that they have been on the field and that they spend many, many years in the field. They do that with high honor and high pride. And I'm thankful to God for those people because of that. I see Dr. Kapiski sneaking up here, and it is time. It's been my privilege to be here, to share with you. Look forward to doing this again sometime. If you have any questions, don't hesitate to call. I always tell people if there's something good you like about the World Mission Program, then tell everybody. If there's something you don't like about it, tell me. And we'll see if we can dialogue through this thing to know whether you're right or we're right or whatever. But above all, I ask you to pray for your missionary personnel. And pray for the staff. We have, I go for Togo tomorrow. I leave for Togo tomorrow. We've got an area secretary who heads for Nigeria in about 2 days. We have an area secretary right now in Taiwan. These people are working hard. They're away from their families for 100, 115, 120 days a year, trying to assist the missionaries in their work, trying to assist the partner churches in their work, and they need our prayers, and they need our prayerful support. Thank you again.